It's time to get well with Raquel. Welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWD.org. KRWG's Wellness Confidential is supported by A Real Man in Mesilla, just off the plaza. Menswear and women's hats for any occasion. Upcoming events include Kentucky Derby, Mother's Day, Wine Fest, or any other outdoor activities. A Real Man located in Mesilla. arealmanonline.com. By Baquera Jewelers. Custom creations by local artists. Silver, gold, and turquoise estate and consignment jewelry. Repair work on watches featuring Mother's Day gift items. Online at BaqueraJewelers.com. Hi, I'm Edmundo Resendez with our special guest, Raquel Garzon. Call in at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or join Anthony Moreno on our social media desk to ask your questions. Everyone who calls in to the show or submits a question via social media will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card from Barnes & Noble or a wellness gift pack that includes a phone consultation with Raquel Garzon. On today's show, we are going to be looking at exercise or lack thereof, in my case. And we want to hear from you at 575-646-2212. Any and all advice on the show should be consulted with your doctor based on your personal health and well-being. Raquel Garzon, welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here with you again.
Well, we did this a while back where we did a wellness show for the holidays, and we did this a year ago where we talked about the four pillars of wellness. So let's start off the conversation by having you give us some background on who you are and what you do.
Okay, great. In summary, my education and experience is in the world of nutrition, exercise, stress management, performance, health, well-being, so in all of these different areas. And I've worked in a variety of settings in the clinical world, community, government, corporations. And now I'm running a company called Revitalize Project. And what we do is basically consult and train employees, mostly of organizations, on all of these sorts of topics, performing well, balancing personal and professional life. How do you work in exercise, eating well, and sleep, and managing stress with all of the demands that you have going on in your life?
Now, exercise, a lot, I did some business many years ago with an organization that was establishing wellness programs in businesses. Is that mm-hmm. what, is that similar to what you're talking about, exercise programs?
No, typically I plug into organizations. They already have wellness programs okay. going on to varying degrees. I come in and it's more of doing training programs specific around resiliency. What are these strategies that you can do to become more resilient? How do you take advantage of wellness programs? So we know that corporations offer wellness programs, and the people who typically take advantage of those are the ones who need it the least. They're mm-hmm. already healthier. And a lot of people who really could benefit from it just aren't engaging. And so I come in and I really try to provide an umbrella that includes everything, including mindset and barriers. And how do you get someone to think about why they would be compelled to eat better or participate in an exercise program or take advantage of some of the things the corporations are offering? So I'm really kind of one that is a liaison maybe okay. between the employees and getting them to the wellness programs.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. You can also join Anthony Moreno on our social media desk to ask your questions. Did you start an exercise program at the beginning of the year thinking it's a New Year's resolution? Did you join a gym where they deduct a certain amount of money every month and you stop going, but they're still deducting off of your checking account? Call in, ask your questions on how you can get back on the wagon and start exercising again. Steps that you may take. Raquel Garzon is here to offer some tips, some advice as to what you can do to improve your well-being. Let's talk about mindset. Yeah. Mindset is very important in order to get this off the ground. And that's where I fall in to the challenge.
I think most of us do. And I think it's something that we don't talk about enough. Typically, when we talk about exercise, we're talking about what to do and how to do it. And what I always say is if people just did what they already knew, they would make a lot of progress. But what we really need to talk about is, first of all, why do you want to exercise? Let's be honest. Exercise requires effort. It's not as easy as watching Netflix, for example. Mm-hmm. And so anything that requires effort, that you have to carve out time for, plan around, you have to have a compelling reason to make it happen. How does it benefit you professionally? How does it benefit you as a parent? How can it benefit other things that you want to do in life? So focusing on why is really important, but then this whole mindset, which is, how do I think about exercise? Do I think about it in a positive way, negative way? How do I think about my typical day? If I've had a hard day, is my mindset, oh man, I deserve to rest. I deserve a break.
Or if you have a rough week and you say, well, I'm going to cheat and eat a pizza.
Yeah, it's how we justify, right? So you've had a hard week and you go, oh, I just want to sit on the couch and do nothing and just, you know, drink a beer and you know, watch Game of Thrones or whatever it is that people are doing. And so you have to fix the mindset. And that's generally where people get they falter. They don't realize the internal factors, mm-hmm. right? The thoughts and the beliefs and the things that are going on inside of them, their emotions, how that affects whether they're going to exercise or not. We don't realize the external factors, how my day was at work, how I felt about myself because of things that happened. I mean, there's so many influences. What are your friends doing? Are you friends with people that exercise or don't exercise? That makes a difference. And so once we become what I call the scientist of myself, once I get to understand what makes me tick, what motivates me, what demotivates me, what allows me to justify exercising and investing in that, and how do I justify not exercising? Now we've got a conversation in which we can then move forward. If you're just focusing on, well, how many repetitions do I need to do? That's not your problem, typically. Even if you know how many repetitions, you're not doing them. And so that's really where we want to make a breakthrough for people.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Barnes & Noble. And let's talk about what you have as a prize pack.
Oh, great. Yeah, so...
And for those of you that are watching on social media...
Yeah, I'm going to show this to you. So I have here two resistance bands. And what's great about resistance bands is you can actually do strength training with them without having to go to a gym, without having to own weights, and you can travel with these. So if you've... Maybe you've done physical therapy and you've gotten a band. These are heavier they're much tougher. And I have a medium band, and then I have a more heavy one that's harder. So you can get this a pack and then start with a medium one. And as you get stronger, you can then graduate to the harder one.
Okay.
And then with it, I have two reminder bracelets in two different sizes. So if you wanted to, you know, give one to your son or daughter to motivate them and you guys can work out together. And a reminder bracelet is good. I'm wearing one. So if you can see this that I'm streaming, it's a reminder of what's important to you and the commitments that you make to yourself and following through. So these bands actually have some inscriptions on them. So the first one is says train for the life you want, which is one of my big things that I say. What kind of life do you want to have? So train for the life that you want. Don't leave it up to chance. You know, really make an intentional, strategic effort to make that happen. And then the other thing that it says is make moments matter, because in every moment you can assess for yourself, what's the best thing I could be doing in this moment that helps advance what I want to do? Is it sitting down and watching TV, which sometimes can be appropriate, or is it get up and do some exercise, because that's going to get me a bigger payoff? So it's a reminder of that. And then along with that, you get a phone consultation with me in which I can help you break through any barriers, help you to explore your individual mindset and issues you may have, whatever you need.
Okay, let's talk about, here we are, it's the month of April. Some of us made New Year's resolutions that mm-hmm. we're going to eat healthy, mm-hmm. that we were going to exercise more. Some of us joined gyms.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so easy to give up on these? Some people give up on them by February.
Yeah.
And some of them last a little bit longer. But why does it become convenient to give up on resolutions? Are resolutions a bad idea to begin with?
They can be motivating, but here you have to be really careful. We are human beings, and we hate change, even when change is good for us. We do everything to resist change. And so that is just a fundamental thing about us. So to make a change, you have to have a compelling reason. Why have you made this resolution for yourself? How does it connect to what matters? If you're doing it to look better, I can tell you that's only going to last a certain amount of time. Because we're also designed as human beings, when we're under stress and when we're under pressure and we have a lot of demands, we tend to shift over to survival brain. And what survival brain tends to tell you is, Do what feels good now and avoid anything that requires effort or pain. So when you start to look at eating, well, what feels good now? Fat, sugar, salt, that's what feels good now. You know, avoid effort and pain. Well, don't exercise, relax. So, you know, it's called temporal discounting. We view like right now instant gratification as much better as something that requires effort and it's hard work and blah, blah, blah. Oh, I just don't have a compelling enough reason to make that happen. And that's, so where people make the mistake, it's not that setting a goal or a resolution is bad. You have to understand what your intention is and why you're doing it and how it ties to something critically important to you, like being a parent or being a good spouse or partner or being a high performer or being able to live a high quality life. If you're just doing it for the sake of doing it, or because everyone else is doing it, that's just, or to be competitive, generally that's just short-lived. We have to tap into our why.
Okay, let's talk about age demographics. We have a pretty wide ranging in age demographics with our audience. What's the difference between an exercise program for somebody that's under 35 versus somebody that's 55? When my mother was diagnosed with diabetes, they told her she needed to go out and do some more walking, that she needed some kind of exercise. And she tried it, but gratification came in and gave up on it. What are some good ways to motivate our audience that might be on the older side to get them to exercise more? Because I would imagine exercise equates longer living. By the way, if you want to join in on the conversation, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212 to talk to Raquel Garzon. I'm Edmundo Resendez. This is KRWG's Wellness Confidential. Be well with Raquel. Join in on the conversation at 575-646-2212. So go back to that question of age demographics.
Man, you just asked me like a question that's going to take the rest of the hour, but let me try to keep it to summarize. So first, it might surprise people to learn that fundamentally, whether you're young or older, the recommendations on exercise are exactly the same. So fundamentally, we all should be doing aerobic exercise, strength training, and flexibility exercise, no matter the age. We also all, regardless of age, should be working to a point in which it causes discomfort to do that exercise. Now, where the difference is if you're younger, perhaps you have to do a higher level of exercise to reach discomfort. When you're older, you might have to do less to reach that same level of discomfort. But nowadays, we've got really young people who are very unfit, and we've got older people who are very fit. So that's not even the case. It's all relative to you. If I'm doing aerobic exercise, I need to do aerobic exercises that causes cardiorespiratory discomfort, meaning my heart rate goes high and I'm breathing heavy. So whether that's, you know, a walking pace, jogging pace, or sprinting pace, that depends on what your fitness level is. From a strength training perspective, you're finding a resistance that is uncomfortable for your muscles. By the end of the set, it's been difficult to do. So that might be lighter weight for someone who's older or not as fit, and it might be heavier weight. But the fundamental is the same. It's not, oh, you're older, so you shouldn't be doing strength training. No. Everybody needs to be doing this regardless of condition, type 2 diabetes. Now, you may have injuries or other things that may affect exactly what types of exercises you do, but it doesn't change those fundamentals. So then what it becomes is, at a young age, why are you motivated to exercise versus an older age? So as you get older, you start to realize that things don't work as well as they used to. So for older people, it could be considerations around functionality and independence. If I do exercise on a regular basis, I am more likely to be able to do more for myself, by myself, for a longer period of time. It's not necessarily about length of life. It's about how much life you have in the length you're given. And so you don't want to lose your body before you lose your mind.
And that's something that, you know, with my father-in-law, for example, again, he too was diagnosed with diabetes, and he tried the exercise program, but one of the challenges he had is he's got a broken back, and he finds he can't walk around anymore. And we try to encourage him. It's like, okay, old man, you got to lift your arms. You got to lift your legs. You got to try to
anything
do something.
Anything that works, you use it. That's what I would say to people.
But again, the big complaint he has is like, it hurts.
Yeah.
You know, and we tell him that's part of it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to hurt.
And you have to figure out, obviously, the difference between pain that's not re-injuring something or injuring something worse, and the type of pain that just sometimes comes with stuff like physical therapy. If you've ever had surgery or done something, it hurts. But that's part of the process to healing and getting stronger. But that's where working with somebody can help you distinguish between the two. So what I would say is you have to explore why you would exercise and the benefits that you get from it, short-term, long-term, body-wise, and brain-wise, because I can tell you that, you know, most people associate exercise with weight loss. That is the last reason that you should be exercising, honestly. That's just a side benefit. That's just an outcome of the cellular changes, the things that are going on. Here's what I can guarantee you. If you work out, you get fitter, no matter your age. If you work out correctly, you get fitter. And that has implications. It has implications for preventing heart disease, certain types of cancer, diabetes, and other metabolic issues. Not only that, but it improves your quality of life. Reduces falls and loss of balance and injuries and things along those lines. But not only that, it helps keep your brain younger. And so I always tell people, even if you have no reason to exercise for your body, you're like, look, this ship has sailed. It is what it is, which you can get fitter at any age. That's fine. Then take care of your brain. It causes brain changes to occur. You can create new brain cells even at an older age. And who couldn't use new brain cells? It really can be protective to cognitive decline. Because the other thing you don't want is to also lose your mind before your body. So exercise as a way is to preserve and enhance the body, but also the brain. It can help with anxiety and depression, mood. I mean, so many different things. There's really no reason why someone wouldn't exercise. Like, that's how I look at it, of course.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation on Being Well with Raquel, KRWG's Wellness Confidential. What's on your mind? Have you started an exercise program? What results have you seen? Have you seen some positive results? Would you like to share them with our audience? Call in right now, 575-646-2212. Let us go to our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. What's on your mind?
Well, we have some folks who are weighing in on our Facebook page. We have someone who is pretty excited about the program, saying it's a great topic and offering great tips. Also, we have a question on our Facebook page regarding vitamin supplements, obviously a $1 billion industry, and they are asking Raquel, what is a good vitamin supplement that she could recommend?
Yes, it's a great question, and it's one I get all the time. Unfortunately, it's a very difficult one to answer because, as people probably know, it's not as tightly regulated as other industries, so you don't always know what you're getting in the package. So generally,
I go to convenience stores, and they have them, and
yeah,
you know.
it's really hard. So what I would say is, if you're going to choose to take a vitamin for whatever reason, you're going to choose to do that for, because I can't also say that everyone should be taking one and what type, because there are very individual factors that go into that. But if you decide to go and take a vitamin, you want to use one by a big brand, one that is very reputable, has, you know, something to lose, obviously, if they were putting incorrect things into their vitamins. So think big brands, big names. It's not worth it to get in trouble. And so I would go with something along those lines. But beyond that, in terms of what those vitamins contain, it does become individualized. And I don't want to make recommendations that would be harmful to somebody, and you should always talk to your doctor.
And that's the key to this entire conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you want to exercise, but, you know, again, my doctor asks me this every time I get a checkup, every annual I get a checkup. It's like, are you exercising? And I'm like, well, I take walks and I park far away, but that's not exercise.
See, I already know what that is. Yeah. So here's the other thing is that if you were to look at a hierarchy of health behaviors I could engage in that would really get me a lot of benefits, vitamins is not going to be at the top of the list in any way, shape, or form. There are so many things that we could be doing. And so sometimes it's great. Take a vitamin, get, you know, a reputable one. Maybe it helps. Maybe it's just the placebo effect. If it doesn't cause harm, great. But are you engaging in all of those other behaviors that can really pay off? You know, stress management, getting enough sleep, eating fruits, vegetables, and high-fiber foods, reducing, you know, foods that can cause issues in you, exercising on a regular basis. And sometimes when we take vitamins or pills, we're like, okay, I'm good to go. I don't need to do any of that other hard stuff. This has got me covered. And so we just have to be careful with that, because sometimes we can justify not doing something because we think another behavior is taking its place.
Anthony?
That was like a complicated question, yeah. Anthony.
Oh, there's a lot going to it. I guess I had another question for you. There may be some folks listening right now who were very active when they were younger. Perhaps they were athletes or involved in some sort of sporting activity and probably had to eat a lot to fuel that activity. Well, if they are no longer doing that, how do you find that balance between perhaps not being as active as you once were, perhaps as an athlete, and going into, you know, a more, I guess, different type of lifestyle where you're not training all the time, but you want to exercise, but maybe don't train as much as you used to do. So how do you find that balance between, you know, eating your a healthy diet compared to, you know, not consuming as many calories as you once maybe needed to?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question. As we age, we generally don't work out as much. Even if you weren't an athlete, as you age, you don't need to eat as much food, typically. That's just what happens with changes in our muscle mass and hormonal changes that are occurring through the aging process. And part of the problem is we never listen to our bodies to listen to say, okay, I need to eat. My body's telling me that. And my body's saying that I've had enough to eat. We're very visual eaters. How much is on the plate? We're very social eaters. Well, how much is everybody else eating? Mm-hmm. Financial eaters. I paid for it, so I must eat it. And so that what happens is we do have the ability to listen to our body for our body to say, listen, you're not as active, buddy. You need to cut down. But we tend to override those signals. We lose that connection. If you listen to your body when you are less active, you're not quite as hungry. But we eat out of habit. We eat out of, you know, I've always eaten 4 slices of pizza. And so I just continue to do it without thinking about it. So my first advice to people is to really pay attention to your body. Listen to what it's telling you. Stop eating when you're satisfied. Don't get full or stuffed. Experiment, journal, you know, keep track on an app about your food intake. And maybe you can do a gross calculation, you know, they'll do that. And then how many calories you actually consume, because we tend to underestimate how much we consume. It's just self-awareness. I think it's being the scientist of you. Obviously, if you're gaining weight, what you're doing is not working. If you're gaining weight and that's not what you want. So it becomes up to you to figure this out. But generally, as you age, you need to eat less and less and less food. And it's just a realization.
Are meal preps advisable in this kind of situation, meal prepping?
Any time that you can plan and prepare with strategy, you always do better. And this is across the board. I work with corporate employees all the time, and that's one of the biggest things they say. When I prepare and I plan out my meals and I have the things available, I actually do really, really well, because that's one less thing that I have to worry about and deal with, and I'm less likely to venture outside of that. But the second that you're like, I'll just wing it, our survival brain is not going to run towards the tofu and salad and eat small amounts. That's just not how we're wired.
All right. This is a myth. I know it's a myth, but I follow it.
You love it.
If I eat well, I don't have to exercise.
Look, I just tell people eating and exercise, although they interact together, you should see as two separate cylinders in terms of like what you can use to energize yourself. Even if you eat well, it doesn't take the place of exercise. And if you exercise, it doesn't take the place of eating well. They have two different functions. So it's like looking at an engine versus like something else in a car. You have to have both. So eating well is a tool. And if you're taking advantage of it, you're going to get some benefits. But then if you have exercise as your tool and you also do that, you're going to get not just additional benefits that eating won't give you, you'll get enhanced benefits of your eating. So it's like the symbiotic relationship, right? So how I'm doing with exercise enhances the eating, and the eating enhances the exercise. So I'm getting more out of both, if that makes sense.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in the conversation with Raquel Garzon. Be well with Raquel. It's KRWG's Wellness Confidential. I'm at Undo Resendez, your host. Call in with your questions or comments on exercise or on being well. What are you doing to have a wellness program? What do you do about exercise? Are you eating better? Do you find yourself, in my case, Raquel, is as I've gotten older, I feel as though my metabolism is, I feel like I've slowed down and I don't want to do as many activities as I used to. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Let us go to our phone lines where we have Patty standing by. Patty, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. What's on your mind? Patty?
Hey, on speakerphone or?
Yes. What you got?
Okay, good. Well, I'm so glad you guys are having this show. I remember hearing about it, but I forgot. And when I turned it on, I was like, yes, because the timing couldn't be better. I'm one who, and I'm a lot older now, but I'm still kind of, I'm from California where it's like we're professional tanners and image and looks and all of that. So it's like, you know, the weather starts getting good and I feel like, oh, you better get out there and exercise. But, you know, as everybody knows, it's like, okay, thinking about it and doing it are two different things. I love everything Rachel has said. I kind of missed some of the details at the beginning. One thing is I live pretty close to the aquatic center, which also has a fitness center, you know, on the second floor. But I, at one point, I was engaged in, like, the yoga classes and stuff there. But, you know, once you make a break, it's hard to get back into it. And, and it's like, boy, I just needed a good shot of inspiration from you.
Oh, thank you, Patty. Well, it's great that you called in. Are you asking about the different types of exercises maybe you could take advantage of at the aquatic center?
No, I'm wanting you to say something that'll be like, aha, that's it.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure, Patty.
Nothing hard to ask.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, we talk a lot about mindset. And, you know, what I tell people is it's hard to take that first step, you know, to go and just do it. But what you want to think about is maybe the last time you did it, how did you feel afterwards? You know, did you regret going and exercising? Most people don't. Most people, wow, I'm so glad I went. I feel so much better. It really pumps you up. And so if you can take those feelings from past times that you've exercised and bring them to the present moment and say, that's how I'm going to feel. I'm going to tap into that. That can be a motivator to just get up and go. The other thing I tell people is try not to overwhelm yourself by saying, I'm going to go to the, you know, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to do a swim, and then I'm going to lift weights, and then I'm going to do a yoga class, because it sounds so overwhelming that you're tired before you start. So what I tell people is first start by getting in some workout clothes and just start there. And then make a deal that you're going to show up to the gym, and then that's what you're going to do. And then when you get to the gym, just start something, and then you can build from there.
Steps.
So yeah, it's like little steps, because If you say, I need this whole workout, it's going to be an hour, you start to go, oh, you know, I really need to do laundry and I really need to do this instead. And so it's really just taking those small baby steps. Get to the gym and start something, and then see if you feel inspired to stay there and keep on going, and then really hone in on what kind of feeling are you looking for? Is it an enhanced mood? Do you feel strong? Does it make you feel confident? Do you feel invincible? And really tapping into that for your inspiration. Does that help?
Yes, and it's funny, those two things are actually things that I do use. One of them is like, you know what, you don't even have to do anything when you get there.
Yeah.
So, like, that's my first goal, and I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I mean, I use for everything that I don't really want to do, I always think from the end point back. Yeah, well, how am I going to feel if I don't do it versus when I do it? Yes, yeah. I always feel better after. So
look at that. You're already an expert, Patty.
Well, you know, I have good tools, but I kind of forgot them. And it's funny, you went right to them. You must have been reading my mind.
We're connected.
All right, Patty, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let us go straight to our phone lines. Graciela, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. You are on with Raquel.
Dr. Garcon, how are you this morning?
Good. How are you, Dr. Graciela?
So, I actually, I think it's great, one, that there's a lot of enthusiasm in your voice in this issue that it's so hard to get up to. So, but I do have one question actually for you that is that I've been wondering, since you work with a lot of companies, what are, in your experience, what are important predictors of success for an employee wellness program to really kick off and get maintained?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. I think that it starts with, you know, what's the culture of the organization? So a lot of times you have these wellness programs, but the culture is one that employees don't really feel empowered that they can go and actually take advantage of these things, that it looks like they're slacking, that they're, you know, not taking their job seriously because they're working out, because they're, you know, doing a yoga class in the middle of, you know, their work day or whatever it might be. Sometimes that culture doesn't really empower or inspire people. I think, you know, leadership buy-in, not just buy-in, but what is leadership doing to demonstrate that this is not just important, but it's part of daily business, just as important as outcomes and metrics. How are they really showing, you know, put your money where your mouth is, first of all, is one of the things that I say. But what are they doing as people to demonstrate this? How are they empowering managers to handle this? And how are they empowering employees to really understand that this is what we need you to do and want you to do just as much as business? Uh-huh. And, because they know that it's going to be a win-win. You know, we know that when people are feel, first of all, that their company cares about them as human beings, not just a human doing that delivers on metrics, it makes a huge difference in retention and engagement and how much they're willing to give, sacrifice, because we have to make sacrifices.
Right.
But it makes a very big difference in their mindset towards things. And then what happens is you create a culture of support and encouragement, which is also another big thing. How are employees supporting each other, noticing, I see that you're burned out, let's go do a yoga class together. That many people are doing this. So you have a grassroots almost effect that occurs as well. And what programs tend to do is just incentivize. They give you points or they do contests. For me, I'm not in agreement with those things because the science doesn't really back those things up as being good strategies for sustainable behavior change, but they're easy to do. So that's what we glom onto. You know, the hardest things are the ones that require the most effort, and it requires effort to really create a cultural shift within an organization, but it's worthwhile. Everybody wins.
So I'll follow up really quickly. It's interesting and perhaps ironic that you're speaking to something that I subscribe to, you know, health, both body, mind.
Mm-hmm.
At a university radio station, have you ever had an academic institution follow a wellness program?
Yes, there are academic institutions that have wellness programs, not just for their students, because that I think is more common, but also for their faculty and staff.
So that's the group that I'm most interested in.
Yes, and there are research articles. Some of the conferences that I attend have some of these universities that come, and they have an entire, you know, wellness team that manages this. And I think we can learn. You know, everyone can improve, and they're at these conferences because they want to improve. But I can tell you that the majority of universities are not represented at these conferences.
Wow. So just theoretically, if you were to give NMSU a quick kind of like, this could work in academia, it's not as a business, like what would you recommend?
Well, I mean, it functions just like a business. You're depending on faculty and staff to be high performers and bring their best every single day to influence young minds and the future of, you know, our country and world. So like, to me, I look at it, it's just like a business. So it's, you know, creating a strategy, and you have to fund a strategy. If you have a strategy to do something and you think it's important, it has to have funding, it has to have resources, it has to have best practices in place. And the university could easily decide that that's something that's on their, you know, radar as something that's important. And then they have to just do strategic planning and business planning around that, just like you would do anywhere else. And it's easy a lot of times to cut costs when costs are, you know, everyone has to deal with budgets. This is in the corporate world as well. But what are the costs long term if you don't invest in something like this, whether it's burnout, healthcare, increased healthcare costs, a turnover, you know, just attitude of faculty and staff and how that affects students and enrollment and all of those things. You have to think big picture. So it's a hard question. Hopefully I've given something helpful.
All right, Dr. Graciela.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or you can join us on our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by to take your social media questions. Again, all calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Barnes & Noble or a wellness price pack courtesy of Raquel Garzon. And the name of your company is?
The name of my company is Revitalized Projects.
Okay, Revitalized Projects. Let us go to our social media desk. Anthony Moreno standing by. What's going on, Anthony?
Well, we just have some more comments. People are encouraged about the program right now. I did have a question. You were talking about wellness programs at places of work. You know, many people have different levels of these programs. You know, mm-hmm. some may be very basic, where folks are just, you know, weighing in perhaps every week or doing a walking challenge or meeting up to do different things together. Others are a little bit more invasive, you know, that involve blood tests and things mm-hmm. like that. If you were going to give advice to a company on where to start with this, what would you tell them?
I tend to start at the top and go down. So first of all, it's looking at why you would want to have a wellness program and how that ties into the business's vision and mission and values. I think it's a communication strategy. So getting all the leadership together and on board and realizing, not just crunching numbers and saying, well, how much money are we going to save on healthcare costs? But it's looking at things that are just a little bit harder to put numbers on. You know, how does this enhance employee engagement and how they feel about the company and whether they feel cared about or not? But it's having a discussion and aligning to that and committing to then what are the strategies? Just like in business, if you say this is our new market we're going to and this is why and this is how it connects to our mission, we're going to put strategies behind it, we're going to resource it, and we're going to plan it out. It's really no different than that. Everybody that's in business is skilled to do this because they're doing it every single day. You figure out why, you figure out how it plays into the mission and vision, you communicate out to employees, you begin to create strategies and plans, and you begin to implement all of the different things around processes, systems, everything to align with that. And so I know you have to start somewhere, but starting at the bottom up with just low-hanging fruit, we're just going to make people take do a biometric type of thing. Well, it doesn't really get you very far. We know this from the studies and the evidence. So we tend to go for low-hanging fruit. We tend to go for things that are cheap to do, but then you really don't get payoff, and so you're spinning your wheels. It's just like in a business. You can't start off with small little decisions on the ground if they're not playing into an overall strategy and you have all of those other things in place. You won't benefit from those things on the ground.
One other thing, do you think there's enough research out there to really ask the question or really answer the question if wellness programs are working? Do we know enough about the information out there right now?
I think that, you know, just with other research studies, you know, people tend to ask the research question that might benefit them. The data can be interpreted and used in many different ways. I think a lot of the evidence around, you know, return on dollar, I think it's really tough to say whether those are true returns. I think that there's still a lot of work to do. And so I think there's enough evidence to show that, for example, when employees feel appreciated and well taken care of, they're more likely to bring their best and do their best for an organization. And we know that the difference between one organization and another in terms of a competitive, field, it's the people and what they bring to the table, because that's where innovation comes from. That comes from people, you know, errors and, things that are against the law. That comes from people. Just all of the factors that really involve a company and how well they're going to do involves people. And if you care about your people and you take care of them, they take care of you. That's how I look at it.
Okay. You do corporate training beyond the United States. You do it in other countries. Where is the United States in terms of developing wellness programs, exercise programs, compared to other countries?
I think we're pretty far along when you start to look at other organizations. Obviously, if you're working with a global organization that has a presence in other countries, they may already have things in place because they're global and they have a presence here in the U.S. But I would say that, you know, we're pretty far along. We still have a long ways to go, but you have to start somewhere. So I don't want to, you know, put down anything that companies are doing in wellness. It's a complicated project, you know, to take on an endeavor. And when you're talking about human behavior and not, a hard tactic, let's say, in sales or marketing, when you involve human behavior, it becomes more complex because human beings act in many different ways, and they're influenced by a lot of different factors. And so you have to take all of those into consideration. So the environment, meetings, how are those set up? What do those look like when you offer food? The things in the environment to nudge people towards getting up and moving, choosing healthy foods, you know, all of those sorts of things.
It's interesting you bring this up. We recently had a meeting here for KRWG Public Media, and I was in charge of providing the snacks.
Mm-hmm.
And
what'd
I went.
You bring?
Well, here's the interesting thing.
I want to know.
Okay. In previous meetings, I've brought in veggie trays and fruit trays.
Mm-hmm.
But what was happening was that people weren't participating and they weren't eating it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you felt unloved.
I felt unloved. So I brought cookies.
They loved you.
And they ate the cookies.
Yeah, it's like our mom when we got hurt and they would give us cookies, certainly not broccoli, to make us feel better. So, yeah, we have these built-in traditions and social things and our mindset. And the mindset is, if my company provides food, I want it to be indulgent because I work hard. It's all part of that mindset, especially when you don't have a broad communication or a strategy around it. If you're, there's not a health push and a challenge and a culture around that, then your vegetables are going to get thrown in the trash, right? So you have to create this ambiance and a culture of health. And you want people to buy into it, meaning, what am I getting out of it? You want people to come in and be like, my company cares about me, and they're giving me the fiber I need to have good health and a good gut microbiome. But you have to create that environment.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. My special guest is Dr. Raquel Garzon. If you want to join in on the conversation, we've got about 14 minutes in the show. You can call up and let us know what's on your mind. What types of exercise programs have you participated in? What's been effective for you? What's not worked for you? Raquel, let's talk about exercise for, let's bring it back home to, again, we've talked about corporate and we've talked about different businesses offering exercise programs. Let's talk about family and, you know, finding ways to motivate family members to exercise. And let's talk about exercise for diabetes, people that have diabetes, because, again, that hits close to home. And I've done shows on diabetes for KRWG, for Fronteras, Changing America. And that's one of the challenges that they bring up, is trying to get diabetics to exercise.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One is that if you do aerobic exercise, so cardiovascular exercise and strength training before you get diabetes, right? Mm-hmm. So you can use that to prevent yourself from becoming diabetic. You can't influence all of the factors, but it reduces your chances. If you're pre-diabetic and you exercise and you're doing both of those types of exercise, you may prevent yourself from becoming a type 2 diabetic. If you're already a type 2 diabetic, doing exercise like cardiovascular exercise and strength training, so I want to be clear that it's still both, there is an enhanced benefit of doing both, you can see improvements in insulin resistance and hemoglobin A1C levels and blood sugars, body fat reduction, especially from the midsection. But here's what I will tell you that I teach in diabetes specifically. Less is more, meaning that we generally recommend 60 minutes, 5 days a week. And if you're not in discomfort, so if you're not working out hard enough, you may see no benefits to your diabetes measures. I recommend cutting down on the amount of time that you spend on exercise, but really going to discomfort, really pushing yourself and getting out of breath and getting that heart rate up and challenging those muscles. And what studies show is when you do that, you see more change in your diabetic measures than if you just do prolonged exercise for a really long time without intensity. So cut down on the time and do more.
Let's go to Deborah. Deborah, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. You're on with Raquel.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. I'm motivated now to go to the gym, but I'm curious on what is a good snack or drink to like replenish ourselves after a workout. And then I know that first workout, I'm going to be super sore the next day. Would I work out that next day? Should I skip a day before a follow-up workout?
Great question. So first, when you work out, yes, so you should eat something in the 2 hours prior to exercising to fuel.
2 hours.
Within, okay. Yeah. And then after you exercise, you do want to replenish. And typically the best combination is a combination of carbohydrates and protein together. Carbohydrates will help replenish glucose that's been used by the muscles during exercise. And protein helps with muscle protein synthesis. And it also just helps create more sustainability. And so these are things that would be dairy products have a nice combination of carbohydrate and protein. It could be a trail mix that has fruits and nuts because that's a combination. It could be a sandwich. sandwich or half a sandwich, you know, bread and some lunch meat or, you know, peanut butter or something along those lines. You know, a lot of people do the shakes. The shakes can be convenient, but they can get expensive as well. You can do milk. So it doesn't have to be anything too complicated. So what I would look for are carbs and protein, something simple and something practical. In terms of being sore, yes, so you will be sore. That's a sign that it's working. And so the recommendation is to drink plenty of water and to do stretching after you exercise, because that can help with that process. The rule of thumb is if you've done strength training for a particular muscle group, then you want to have a skip at least one day before you go back to that same muscle group. So if you work out all of your muscles in one day, then the next day you should give those muscles a rest and maybe do something that's more like yoga, Pilates, or, you know, cardio, aerobic exercise. I split up my muscle groups, so sometimes I work like just upper body, and then the next day I can go back and work lower body. So I am doing 2 days in a row, but I'm not doing the same muscle 2 days in a row.
Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
All right, Deborah, good luck, and hopefully we are motivating people to get out and exercise some more. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let's talk about exercise for children. How do we get the kids motivated to get off the tablets, to get off the TV, to get off the computers, and go outside?
I think we have to make it fun. We cannot make it another chore to do. You know, I think that's really the key here. I mean, again, if we're designed as human beings to seek pleasure and avoid pain, tablets are way more fun seeking pleasure. And the exercising, if that's how it's worded, doesn't sound as good. So it's about tapping into what they think is fun. And so if it's going to the playground, if it's, you know, jumping on a pogo stick, if it's the parents doing something with their kids. So what we tend to do is say, go do something. Well, why don't we go with them?
Go out there together.
Yeah, so I used to run this fitness program for overweight kids, and one parent was required to participate, and every week we did something different. It might be basketball, it could be swimming, roller skating, and just watching the parents have to engage in something they weren't good at. I think it's important because kids sometimes feel, if I'm not good at it, I shouldn't be doing it. And that's not the message we want to send. So get out there, do stuff that you suck at as a parent to show that that's not the important part, that it's having fun, moving, you know, just having fun doing it. So just, I think, finding ways and understanding your kids, because my two kids are completely different in what they would find fun. And then sports are always good. You know, maybe less competitive sports for those kids who just don't have that competitive, you know, chip inside of them. That can be very stressful. So finding something that's just more fun.
Okay, I want to talk about something that you brought up earlier, and that's the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of exercising now to prevent the aging process. Explain a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so when we exercise, there are changes that occur at the cellular level. You have anti-inflammatory chemicals that are released. So when you look at the aging process, I mean, we're all going to age. Let's be for real.
Mm-hmm.
But some of us are aging much quicker than others. And so that's really what we're looking at. Can we slow down that aging process? And you can, by various factors. There are nutrition factors. I'm just going to focus on the exercise ones. Is when you exercise, you reduce inflammation. When you exercise, like I said, you can create new brain cells. When you exercise, you can preserve gray matter in our brain, which is what we use for the executive function. Memory can be preserved. And then just basic body function. You know, so I oftentimes look around and I, you know, when I travel and I want to go hike and do fun things, and I look at people who aren't that old to me, right? Because as you get older, you keep pushing off what you think is old, but they can't take advantage of those things. They can't go hike. They can't do the zip lines. They can't do some of these things because their body is no longer in a condition to do that. And so it's really about slowing down that loss of quality of life, which I think is super key.
Let's talk about the difference and the advantages, disadvantages of having a home gym and a gym membership. I talked about that earlier, about people signing up for a gym membership and then after a couple months not going back. What's a good way to motivate yourself if you have a home gym? What's a good way to motivate yourself if you have a gym membership?
So some people benefit from the gym membership because they benefit from the other people around them. The other people are motivating to them. Mm-hmm. So they get there and they see other people working out and it motivates you, and people are there watching you perhaps. And so you go, man, I better get into this. And we get to know people at the gym and they start to expect us to go. So there's a little bit of accountability. So I think that that's one of the benefits of a gym. That's why I like to go to my gym. Mm-hmm. Other people feel mortified going to a gym, and they will say to me, you know, I'm going to go to the gym and work out as soon as I get fitter. They have to get fitter to go to the gym. And I'm like, because they just feel self-conscious about how they look. They feel like they don't know what they're doing. And in those cases, I would say is sometimes you just have to not care about stuff like that. You just care about the results that you're going to get, and you work with a personal trainer. But maybe that's not going to work. So a home gym then has the benefit of you can exercise privately. You don't have to feel self-conscious about it. The danger with a home gym is it becomes part of our furniture at times. Mm-hmm. So it's there so much that it just starts to fit into the background, and you hang your clothes on it, and you just...
Guilty.
So you have to know yourself. I have both so that I can use those strategically, but I have to know myself. How do I think and how do I work in order to really get the most out of either one?
Okay. So as we wrap up the show, let's talk about benefits of exercise. Who should exercise? When should they exercise? How often should they exercise? To wrap up the show,
everyone should exercise.
All right, we just got one question on Facebook.
Yeah. Said, okay.
I have a problem getting motivated, but hate paying gym fees.
Yeah. So again, it depends on you. If paying the fee is like, oh, now I have to go, that's a good idea for you. But if it's about, I don't want to pay for it, you don't have to pay for it. Exercise is free. They have so many apps now and videos that you can watch that are body workouts where you can just use your body weight at home and follow along, and you can get strength training and cardio. They have HIIT workouts. But the truth is you have to tap into why you should work out. I always ask people, what is a compelling enough reason for you to do something that's hard instead of something that's easy? And I think that's the biggest question. So everyone should exercise. Everyone should do aerobic resistance and flexibility. Aerobic should be...
Let me ask you this. Okay. Let me interrupt you. My doctor says, Edmundo, if you just do it for 25 minutes a day, that's a good start.
Anything is a good start. If you start with 5 minutes a day and you do it consistently and you do it right, it's going to be beneficial. So start with small steps and build upon them. Create a balanced program, aerobic, resistance, and flexibility, because they each do something different for you, and work at your own level. Where are you starting? How do I want to build myself? And you have to get uncomfortable. You have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's what I always
say. Raquel Garzón, where can people get a hold of you?
You can find my information at revitalizeproject.com. And there you can link into social media and reach me via email and phone.
Okay, let's do the drawing for the $25 gift card to Barnes & Noble. Let's see who is the winner.
The winner of that is Alicia Provencio Aguilar.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Alicia.
Yeah.
And let us do the drawing for the prize pack.
Yes, the prize pack and your optional phone session with me. If you don't want to talk to me, you don't have to. And it is Lorraine Urquidi.
Lorraine, congratulations.
Lorraine, well, I look forward to talking with you if you would like to talk with me and helping you to use the resistance bands as well if you want.
Okay. Raquel, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Edmundo.
I appreciate, as always, having you on board.
And thank you, listeners, callers, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to KRWG's Wellness Confidential on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. If you missed some of today's show, it will be available on krwg.org momentarily. And of course, it's available on KRWG's Facebook page, where you can look at our smiling faces. I am your host and producer for KRWG's Wellness Confidential, Edmundo Resendez. Jacob Lockwood is co-producer and handled the phones. Anthony Moreno handled the social media desk. Mark Johnson was our technical producer. And Fred Martino is director of content. Mark your calendar for KRWG's Beer Confidential live at the Rio Grande Theater, a live onstage radio show on the art of craft beer with samplings and live jazz music Friday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. Doors open at 5:30. Thank you for joining us on KRWG Public Media, broadcasting live from the beautiful campus at New Mexico State University.